Hi, folks, and welcome to Queer Studies, Simply Syndicated's brand new show about how to be a good ally to the LGBTQ community. My name is Rick, and you may know me from such shows on Simply Syndicated as Starbase 66 and The Admiral's Table and Movie News and some movies you should see and Ray Guns and Go-Go Boots. And I just do way too many podcasts. But I thought it might be a good time to move into the world of reality away from the worlds of fiction, which is where I generally live. And to help me on this journey is my co-host, Casper. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty tired. How are you?
About the same. Today was the first day of school for my little ones, so my freedom has finally come, but at the cost of some rather extreme exhaustion. This is unusual, folks, in that normally for this show, Casper and I will actually be in the same room, which I know is unusual for Simply Syndicated shows, but right now he is about 2,000 miles away, and so there may be some audio anomalies for which we must apologize in advance, but we really want to get this show going. Just a little background on why we're doing this show. It's a new world. There are a lot of wonderful things happening in the world in amongst some really, really horrendously terrible things. But one of the most wonderful things that is going on in the world right now, especially in the U.S., is an awareness of the LGBTQ community. The fact that the right to marry has been affirmed by the Supreme Court. Oh, damn it. I left my phone on. Sorry. So anyway, the world is starting to recognize that straight cis people aren't all there is to life. And unfortunately, there is a hopefully dying gasp of bigotry and homophobia and transphobia going on. And it occurred to me that in my past, whenever I've been afraid of something, I have a tendency to learn as much as I can about that something that's frightening me. And then all of a sudden, the fear goes away. Understanding displaces fear. As human beings, we are unprecedented in the animal kingdom for being able to understand things, for being able to abstract things, for being able to see something that is frightening and learn about it and understand about it and embrace it. And that is the purpose of this show. I am a straight white cis guy. I'm about as average as far as demographics go. There is no average as far as human beings go, but from that lofty artificial pigeonholing of people, I'm pretty much, well, maybe I'm a little older than the demo most people aim for now, but I have as much privilege as anyone is going to have, short of not having any money, because I'm a college teacher. I don't have anyway. And I have been a theater person my whole life, and I've been surrounded by gay and lesbian people my whole life. And I thought I knew what their lives were like, and I thought I knew what they were facing. And to some extent I do, but there's a lot that I don't understand, a lot that I didn't know. And on top of that, while trans people have been around forever and ever and ever, as long as there's been human beings, I've only just in the last few years begun to understand that there's a whole lot more to trans people than just, oh, drag queens. Because that's I always thought trans equals drag queen. And of course, as we will learn over the course of this show, that is not true. It can be, but it isn't. It isn't always. And there are so many different ways that people identify themselves. And that's a big word we're going to use a lot, identify. And if I, who have been surrounded by, I've been surrounded by gay people my whole life, and I'm still learning about this stuff. How many people out there who aren't surrounded by openly gay people? I'm sure all of you know somebody who's gay and you don't know it, or you may not know it. And I would be willing to bet that a huge percentage of y'all have shared a bathroom with a trans person and have no idea, which is how it should be, which is how it is. So I thought, I want to do a show that will help people. I want to do a show that's not just me talking about Star Trek and Star Wars and griping about what happened in this movie or that TV show. And I have had the great good fortune of having Casper in some of my classes and in our theater department where I work. And he has really helped to open my eyes about a lot of things. And so when I got the idea for this show, he seemed the natural person to ask to join to be my co-host. And so I am now going to stop babbling about myself and turn the mic over to Casper and let him tell you something about himself and what he's going to bring to the show.
Oh, something about myself. Well, I like long walks on the beach. No, I'm kidding. I'm kind of like, technically I'm not a teenager. I still feel like a teenager. So I'm just going to say that I'm a teenager. I got into queer activism really early on when I was in middle school. There's this joke with some of the LGBT community that a lot of us start out as either like super homophobic, or some of us start out as like those overly invested straight allies, and I was the latter. I was like that little straight kid that was constantly bitching about why gay marriage wasn't legal and how people who are homophobic are idiots, and my parents ended up being like, why are you always talking about this? And I ended up kind of realizing, oh, I guess I kind of have a stake in this. Huh. That's a thing. And that's kind of where I've been at ever since. My activism as I grew up kind of got a little bit less angry and a little bit more patient as I got into college, because I started to realize that when you're in a place where you feel like the world kind of has it out for you, you kind of become, my friend Sawyer has a really great term for this, you kind of become a hammer looking for nails. And that's a really big trap to fall into. It doesn't just hurt yourself, it kind of hurts your activism and you stop becoming productive. Not to say that like anger doesn't have a place in activism, but that's not where it should begin and end. It should be the mobilizing part. And then once you're actually trying to get people to change and trying to teach people, you're supposed to be compassionate. And when you lose the compassion, you kind of lose your audience. So this is, I guess, my, I don't want to say training ground. I guess it's like, this is basically my space to put being compassionate into practice instead of just preaching it to a whole bunch of radical queers that have no fucking idea how to be compassionate. I'm basically putting my money where my mouth is, and I'm trying to help people who are so far at the beginning of trying to be an ally that they're paralyzed with fear and they don't know what to do, but they want to help, but they're like terrified of doing the wrong thing. I want to be able to help those people because I know what it's like to feel like you're walking on eggshells, and if you make one false move, you're immediately a bad person. And I guess that's kind of where I want to go with this.
Do you want to tell people how you identify yourself?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Oh, well. I personally identify as bigender. That is a term that falls under the non-binary umbrella, which falls under the transgender umbrella. All things that we will get to later, I promise. Basically, being bigender, kind of similarly to being bisexual, means that it's two or more. I identify as both a boy and a woman, and I can't really speak more on that because it's kind of a process. It's one of those things that I'm just trying to figure out, and I'm just going with it, and it's a word that I found this summer, and I really, really like it, so that's what I'm sticking with. So I identify as transgender and also queer sexuality-wise, and yep, that's my resume.
Okay. As a teacher, I have to learn to deal with a wide variety of people, but it's only been within the last 5 years that I have knowingly had any trans people in my classes. A while back, we had a student who, when he came to our department, he was female. And then one summer, as I was getting ready for, look, I saw he was in my class. He said, look, I need you to do me a favor. I would like you to call me, at the time he went by the name Lucian. He has since changed his name again. And I would like you to refer to me by male pronouns. And I had no problem with it from a, you know, it wasn't like, oh my God, that's an abomination. I was like, okay, sure. And a lot of it didn't come as jarringly to me, I think, because we have a person on the Simply Syndicated Network named Ari, who she's one of the founders of Do Ask, Do Tell. And she's a very strong advocate for LGBTQ rights. And through knowing her, I was able to, I had a little bit of preparation for not being judgmental or anything like that, or, you know, not, cause it, that's not me. I don't, you know, I wouldn't dislike this person for saying that, but I was more able to deal with it because I had a little bit of education on it. And then knowing him through his course of studies and through his journey, and we're still in touch. He's gotten hormone therapies and now he's really happy, and I haven't seen him in a few years, but, and I miss him terribly. He's a great guy. But so when I met you, and it was a very similar situation, only you weren't working directly with me. So, and I don't, did you come to me and ask me to treat you as a guy first, or?
So what I remember happening was I worked under Jessica. So Rick does the set building and design and stuff like that and the tech. And Jessica is the person who designs the sets and decides the designs the costumes. Oh my God. And I worked under Jessica for a little while. And my first year, I hadn't come out yet and I was going by my birth name, and Rick saw me every once in a while because his office was right across from the shop. And the next year I started going by Casper, and I was trying to get people to use like some form of pronouns. I can't remember what I was doing. And I'm pretty sure you ended up just going with Casper because I think you had thought that my name was originally Casper and you had just forgotten my name.
That's exactly what happened. I remember it now. A bunch of y'all from the costume shop were in the makeup room and talking, and I came through and I'd been trying to remember your name because I'm terrible with names. And so me forget, especially when it's somebody I don't work with all the time. Mm-hmm. And you weren't in any of my classes yet. So I was just like, oh, that's her. And finally we were talking and I said, what is and you said Casper, and I was like, oh, okay, then I never did know your name. And then later on, I found out what the name you used to use was. I'm like, oh, yes, I did know that. Okay. Let's move on from here.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. We just didn't correct you.
Confusing me is not hard. So,
yep.
So that's where we're both coming from on this show. I'm a lot of times I'm going to be the straight man on this show, in that I'm going to be learning at the same time y'all out there are. Sometimes I may play a little dumber than I am about things just to facilitate the conversation, but a lot of this stuff is going to be as new to me as it is to y'all. And I'm sure Casper's going to learn a lot too, because you're not particularly old.
Just kidding. I know everything and I'm not going to be learning anything. No, I'm really going to learn something.
So what we're going to do with this first show, now that we've gotten the, hi, this is who I am out of the way. We're going to talk a little bit about certain terms, because as with any specialization in life, there's jargon, for lack of a better word. And there are certain terms that we are going to use frequently on this show that you may or may not be familiar with. And so we figured that it would be easiest if we just sort of went through a list of pertinent vocabulary words. And so Casper has compiled a wonderful list of terms that we're going to discuss. I would like, before we dive into your list too much, I would like to get the big, the elephant in the room out of the way. Let's talk about the word queer.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep.
Since it's in our title, and some people might be put off by it, especially by hearing it come out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Let's talk about why we chose that word and what it means.
Why did we choose that word? That's a good question.
Well, you use terms like genderqueer.
Yeah.
Frequently. And it's in the LGBTQ acronym or initialism, whatever you call it. And it's a word that many use as a pejorative. And you know, by dictionary definition, it means something is amiss. 100 years ago, queer was no less used in polite conversation as ejaculate was. Both words have changed their connotations over the years. If you want to know what ejaculate used to mean, look it up. Read Dickens or Wells or any of those.
It makes reading Sherlock Holmes really, really fun.
Yes. Well, kind of a joking thing, like you could see in a Dickensian novel, you could see a phrase, "How queerly he ejaculated as he burned the bloody faggot," is not an offensive sentence. 100 years ago.
Sorry, I'm good.
but nowadays, most of those words have a very different connotation. So queer is a term that would reclaimed be an appropriate word?
So, some people have reclaimed the word queer because queer was a slur, but I think most people pretty much know that because, if you say the word queer near a straight person, they immediately freeze up and clench like they're going to get in trouble just by being near you saying that word.
By the way, you're going to hear me do that a lot on this show, so...
Yeah. I don't know. Queer is tough because there's like two different cans of worms that come with it. And one of them is the fact that a lot of times people take the reclamation of a slur to mean that it's a community identifier. And I just want to make it clear that under no certain circumstances are we operating under the delusion that even though queer has been reclaimed by some people means that it's the queer community. We know that that is not a thing that we can do because that would be applying a slur to other people who may not be as comfortable reclaiming it without their consent. But it is in the acronym, and there are some people who identify as queer because to them that is a better way. To them, that's how they express what their identity is. That's just a word that makes sense to them. And then the other can of worms is the slur reclamation politics, which originally came from African Americans, which is a can of worms I'm not even going to get into right now because it's above my pay grade.
You will not hear that word come out of me very often, other than mentioning the title of the show. But we are acknowledging it. We will not shy away from it. But we also mean it in the, not in a negative sense at all. If I suppose that probably goes without saying, but like I said, you will very often, especially when we get into some of the more delicate issues that we'll be dealing with on this show, you will start hearing me tap dance, and I'm a terrible dancer. okay, that being said, shall we deal with the whole alphabet soup of LGBTQ?
Oh, here we go. Okay. Well. Yeah, coincidentally, the alphabet soup is the first term on the list. So, all I'm going to say is there's a lot of different versions of the LGBT, ABC, XY, you know, that there's many different versions of that acronym. The original acronym that I am most likely going to always be referring to, with some exceptions, is the original one. That's LGBT. Sometimes there's usually a Q slapped on the end of it, and then sometimes an A. So I'm going to just go by that one. The L stands for lesbian. The G stands for gay. The B stands for bisexual. The T stands for transgender. And the Q stands for queer or questioning. Sometimes it just doubles as that. Or sometimes people just put two Qs in there. I don't know anymore. And then sometimes, historically, an A used to be added, and it used to be added for ally. And the reason why that used to happen is because in the 90s and early 2000s, I'm pretty sure that's when that started happening, because there were these really neat things that started popping up in high schools and colleges, and they were called GSAs. And that stands for Gay Straight Alliance. And kids would join these clubs, and they could either be, you know, out gay or bi kids, or they would be allies. And an ally, you know, is a straight person who, you know. And the thing was, there were a lot of these kids who came from homes that were still super homophobic. So in order to join these clubs and form the community that they needed, a lot of times they wouldn't actually go as themselves. They would go as allies. So the reason why the A was originally put into the LGBTQA acronym is to allow closeted kids and other closeted people to feel like they were still part of the community and that they weren't, like, on the outs. Over time, there's been fighting about what the A means, and I'm just not going to touch that with a 19-foot pole right now. And then, should I just go down the list, or is there anything you want to say?
No, let's just go down the list. Yeah, we'll just give definitions. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about the word, the terms. I don't think we need to, because, okay. Full disclosure, folks, this is the second time we've recorded this particular show, because the first time the audio quality was even worse than what we've got now. we kind of went down rabbit holes with just about every term. And I think I'm going to try to avoid that this time. We're just going to give some definitions, give some context for each term, and then move on rather than do a whole lecture on each particular word.
Yeah. And we can just do the rabbit holes on later shows.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we will discuss all of these things in depth as the show goes on. But, you know, I think everybody understands what lesbian means, what gay means, bisexual. That's something we need to talk about in more than just a definition term.
Yeah.
So yeah, but let's move along, shall
yep.
we?
There's another acronym. This one, I don't think a lot of straight people will see. It's WLW. It stands for Woman Loving Woman. It's something that's, it was a little bit more in vogue, I think, in the 90s or the early 2000s, but now it's sort of coming back. It's a term that, you know, some women who are attracted to women, whether or not they're bi or lesbian or whatever they identify as, a lot of them use the term woman loving woman to encapsulate their identity. And it's pretty much exactly what it says on the tin. And there's actually just popped up another one. I think I saw this one for the first time like a month and a half ago, MLM. And it basically is just the same thing, men loving men. And there's another one that's MSM, but that one, as far as I know, is not really an identity that you're probably going to see on brochures, particularly at, you know, blood donations or brochures that are for HIV AIDS, like prevention awareness. MSM stands for men who have sex with men. It's not really an actual identity specifically because it sort of, I guess, demeans an entire identity down to just sex, which is not really a thing that we like to do.
That's another topic for further discussion. The distillation of an entire population down to what they do in bed and usually what one thing they do in bed, which is just.
Yeah. But. It's funny because two of the sex things that tend to happen when it comes to dehumanizing LGBT folks is either hypersexualizing them or desexualizing them. And it's pretty amusing because they're on opposite ends of the spectrum. And the next term is kind of a doozy. It's a critical theory term. It comes from, I can't remember if it's Bell Hooks or Kimberly Crenshaw. This term is intersectionality. Intersectionality is the theory that a person's multiple identities work simultaneously to privilege and oppress them. that was kind of a mouthful. So I'm just going to use an example so that I can distill that a little bit. So a lot of people think that intersectionality is a big checklist. Like, for example, if I was going to do the checklist that a lot of self-proclaimed intersectional feminists are super fond of doing, I could be like, oh, well, I'm privileged for being white, but also I'm oppressed because I'm queer, ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. And you have a checklist of the privileges that you have, and then you have a checklist of how you're oppressed, and then you try to balance them against each other and be like, am I more privileged or more oppressed? That is not what intersectionality is. Intersectionality is supposed to be more organic. It's less of a checklist, and it's more of like, when you're talking about the experiences of a Black woman existing in the world as a Black woman, she will experience misogyny in a different way than a white woman will experience misogyny. Because when a Black woman exists in this world, she will be experiencing misogyny and racism, but not separately. It's a type of, it happens at the same time is what I'm trying to say. She experiences racialized misogyny and misogynistic racism. She experiences it as a Black woman, not somebody who is Black and a woman. You cannot divorce them from one another. And it's actually the same thing that functionally happens to white women as well. Because a white woman does not experience misogyny in a way that is divorced from race. The way that she experiences misogyny is also very much because of her status as white. It's a lot of theory. We're probably going to have to unpack that again, because
yeah, that's one I have heard it mostly used in feminist contexts. There's a fantastic podcast I listen to called Women at Warp, which is a feminist take on Star Trek, and looking at how Star Trek deals with and has dealt with women and women's issues and stuff. And they use the term intersectionality rather frequently, but never in a way that like explains it. So I think that perhaps, I don't know if it'll be an entire show, but it's certainly a topic that requires far more than just a quick definition.
Yes.
Because it's an important term, but it's not a very well-known term outside of what appears to be a relatively small subset of a couple of different communities.
Yes. And I think it needs to be said that because the two co-hosts of this podcast are white, the conversations about intersectionality are going to be understandably limited, particularly because it actually was Kimberly Crenshaw. I was right the first time. Kimberly Crenshaw, who is a Black feminist, very, very prominent, came up with intersectionality in her book Mapping the Margins. So this concept comes specifically from Black feminist theory, and there's just a lot of intersections there.
Well, one of the things we're going to do on this show is bring in people, bring in guests, experts, or maybe expert. Well, experts when we can find them, or just people who have more knowledge about things than we do. And so, you know, we've already got some folks lined up. I've got a. Well, we'll talk about that later. Anyway, we will bring in people who have differing viewpoints. And for intersectionality, you know, we can certainly look into getting people who have had different experiences from us to talk about it.
Yeah. Most of the reason why I included intersectionality on this list is not just because it's a very, very important theory, but also because it's the reason why that theory is important to me is because it's that first tip over in activism from being totally black and white and completely categorical to, oh, things are a little bit more organic and nuanced and complicated than I thought they were. So that's something to sort of keep in the back of your mind.
That right there is pretty much the mission statement of this. Everything is far more complicated and organic and nuanced than we want to accept. You know, nobody is just gay. Nobody is just white. Nobody is just male or just female, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We are all conglomerations of lots of stuff.
Yes. Yeah. So the next term that I'm going to give is cisgender. A lot of the people who will be listening to this show may be hearing that term for the first time, and I guarantee most of you are probably that. A cisgender person is basically somebody who agrees with the gender that they were assigned at birth. Sometimes when we're talking, we'll probably shorten it to cis, just like if we're talking about transgender folks, we'll probably shorten it to trans, because we're lazy. So cisgender is functionally the opposite of transgender, but I hesitate to use such a polarizing word because it implies that there's like two, but anyway, basically if you're cis, you're not trans. There you go. And
yeah.
And
they're opposite. Well, yeah, I don't think it's opposite quite so much as you are cis or you are not.
Yes, exactly. Yep. So if you're not cis, there is this wonderful umbrella term that everybody's probably heard by now if you're in the United States. It's transgender. A trans person disagrees with the gender that they were assigned at birth. Now, there's two other umbrella terms that fall under transgender. You can be a binary transgender person or a non-binary person, and both of those are also umbrella terms. Love those. So if you're binary, the reason why it's called binary is because functionally in the Western world, we tend to think of gender in our gender and sex system functions on the premises that there's only two. You can either be a woman or a man. You know, you can either be a boy or a girl. You could either be a female or a male, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of those are aligned and they're supposed to be opposite and exclusive. If you're a woman, you're not a man. If you're a girl, you're not a boy. Blah, 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 blah. And consequently, non-binary is a transgender person who identifies outside of the gender binary. Because, like we were just saying, things are a lot more complicated. The way I like to explain non-binary people is this. If boy were blue and girl were red, then a non-binary person could possibly be lavender. Or they could be yellow. Or they could be gray or black or white or, you know, a really light shade of blue or really, really light shade of pink. There's a lot of different ways to be non-binary. You could be like me where you identify as both, or you could be like my friend who identifies as neither, who doesn't have a gender. You could be on a spectrum, or you could be swimming around totally outside the spectrum. That's the fun part about umbrella terms. The most well-known term for being non-binary is actually genderqueer. That's one that people have probably heard for a little while now. And then on the sex spectrum side of things, the term that we have is intersex. Intersex is a general term, and it's used for a variety of conditions in which a person can be born with reproductive or sexual or whatever anatomy that doesn't seem to fit the typical definitions of what we think of as male or female. The term that used to be used for this was hermaphrodite. Don't do the thing. Hermaphrodite is a slur. Don't use it. It's intersex now. So just, you know, go with the flow.
Yeah, don't say hermaphrodite.
Yeah, yeah. It's not so much that the term hermaphrodite, as far as I know, would be inaccurate. It's just the way that it's been used. It's almost like how the word retarded used to be a totally acceptable medical condition until really shitty 10-year-olds started calling each other that, and now it's not okay.
Yeah.
So thank you, 10-year-olds, for that. I'm just kidding. It wasn't just 10-year-olds, but
it's 12-year-olds too.
Sorry, I'm snorting again.
I taught high school for 1 year, and I saw horrors you would not believe.
Yeah. I'm so glad I'm out of there.
Young boy, you know, I realize I'm diving into the binary pool here, but I've got to say, just young boys are how the human race lived long enough to become advanced as we are. Because I fully understand why some animals eat their young.
So the thing about intersex is the definition that I found basically said it's a general term used for a variety of conditions in which a person is born with reproductive or sexual anatomy that doesn't seem to fit the typical definitions of female or male. But you there are some cases in which you can't just tell somebody is intersex by, you know, looking at their gonads or whatever. It's sometimes it's chromosomal. Sometimes people are born XXY or triple X or whatever, and you'll never be able to find out. There's a lot of things about, we can talk about intersex people later. Just,
because there's some really horrific things that go along with how that's been dealt with over the years.
Yeah. The disclaimer that I want to say is that if somebody is born intersex, that doesn't mean they're born with a defect or that anything is wrong with them. Don't ever say that about an intersex person. Don't be an asshole. Okay, next term is, it's another acronym. It's FTM. And FTM stands for female to male, and MTF stands for male to female. And these are terms that specifically apply to binary trans people, as far as I know. So female to male, an FTM person would probably be referred to as a trans man. And a male to female, MTF, would be referred to as a trans woman. Sometimes people get those mixed up because they're like, if they started out as a woman and then they turn into a man, are they the trans woman or are they the trans man? I am here to clear it all up. It's okay. A person who identifies as a man is a trans man. A person who identifies as a woman is a trans woman. That's it. The end. Also, quick disclaimer, not all trans men are comfortable with being referred to as FTM, just like not all trans women are comfortable being referred to as MTF. And that's because a lot of us don't like being just, you know, having everything condensed down to our genitals. Thanks. Yeah, not really pleasant. The next term is outing. So that's a verb. When you are outing someone, it basically means that you're disclosing their status as a member of the LGBT community to a third party without their knowledge or consent. Don't do that. That's not a good thing to do for a variety of reasons. The surface level reason is you could be putting that person in danger. You could be putting that person's relationship with a third party in danger, or you could actually be physically putting them in harm's way. The deeper thing is, even if you know the third party would totally be fine with it, when you out somebody without their consent, or especially without their knowledge, you take away a lot of autonomy when you do that. Like, I have had so many people out me, and they wouldn't out me to anybody who would particularly care that much, but it was a really frustrating thing when I had been hoping to have that conversation with this person in particular myself, and when another person outs you, that takes the opportunity away. It takes away the opportunity to say what you need to say to this particular person at that particular time. So don't out people, ever.
And, it's none of your business.
Yep. That too.
Occasionally, there may come a point, a situation where, here's a good example. The first time that my colleagues and I at work, we have a weekly meeting where we kind of talk about what we're doing, what we're going to do, what we need to do, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't even remember why, but you came up in conversation, and this was right after you told me. You asked me to refer to you by male pronouns and stuff. And we started talking about you. And I realized that there came a point in the conversation where I had to determine whether my colleagues knew before I said anything more. And they noticed me kind of pausing and being uncomfortable, and they went, oh, it's okay. and then we were able to, and then...
Wait, did they know because I was flaming, or did they know because I...
No, because you would talk to them. Well, I think part of it was that one of my colleagues was having some difficulty remembering to use your correct pronouns. And I was kind of correcting that person, but I realized that I had to, it was tricky.
Yeah.
So, it can be difficult sometimes to know when it's okay to talk about something like that or not. If you're in doubt, just don't, and say, I need to talk to this person before we can continue this conversation or something.
Yes. I'm not going to say that, like, if you out somebody, if you've already outed somebody by the time you're listening, that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, you're a bad person or an asshole. It's just not a kosher thing to do, really. It's just, I don't know. Outing is one of my pet peeves, but it's also a gray area, and I totally appreciate that that's a thing.
As with anything like this, you know, every situation is its own thing. It's, you know, no one thing works for everybody.
Yeah.
I think Wheaton's Law is going to be, you know, I need it embroidered on a pillow. If you're not familiar with Will Wheaton, do you know who Will Wheaton
is? Of course I know who Will Wheaton is, the most annoying character on The Next Generation.
Will Wheaton played Wesley Crusher on Star Trek The Next Generation, but he's also just one of the coolest humans on the planet. And Wheaton's Law is plain and simple, don't be a dick.
Yep.
That's kind of his mantra in life, is just don't be a dick, you know? Just chill out, treat people with respect, and don't be a dick. And outing someone is a real dick move, so.
Yeah. The next term on my list is passing. I have a lot of mixed feelings about this term, but so passing means to, it's exactly what it says on the tin, to pass as straight or to pass as cisgender. Like, you know, for example, if somebody comes out to you and you're like, holy shit, I would have never known you seem so straight. First of all, that's probably not the thing to say. And second of all, that person would be passing. That's a good example of somebody who passes. It's
Laverne Cox, I think, would be, excuse me. If you didn't know that Laverne Cox was trans, and it's not outing her, she's.
Oh, no, yeah, she's out. She's.
I mean, she is drop dead gorgeous. And I think that if you did not know that she was a trans woman, you would never know that she was a trans woman.
Yes. The concept of passing is tricky, so I'm just not going to linger on this, and I'm going to go to the next thing, because it's just so many cans of worms and probably some fish swimming in there, too. The next term is queer. And as we were talking about earlier, queer is a reclaimed slur, but it's for people who are attracted to the same gender or who are not cisgender. There's a lot of people who, you know, under the definitions that I just gave, who could fit under the definition of transgender, but, you know, they don't personally like the word trans, so they, you know, they may not be cis, but they don't identify as trans, so they're not. So not all people who are in the LGBT acronym have reclaimed or are comfortable with the term queer. So like we said, it's not a community identifier. It's kind of a gray, fuzzy area to call it the queer community as such, because that's basically saying, that's basically calling a whole bunch of people queer without having their consent and without a lot of them being okay with it. So we're going to try our best to not do the thing. But yeah, there's been a lot of discussion over who has the right to reclaim the slur queer. And basically it's, if you would have been called that, you're basically somebody who can reclaim it. It's that simple. Basically, people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans. There you go. And then the next word is ally, and that's kind of self-explanatory. It's a straight and or cisgender person who uses their privilege to challenge systemic homophobia and transphobia. The concept of an ally can actually spread across different subjects to issues of misogyny or racism or ableism. And I think the best example of how to demonstrate how to be an ally is just the fact that, you know, Rick can be privy to a lot of conversations that I am simply never going to be able to hear now that I'm out. And I'm sure, like, a lot of women or a lot of black people will know what I'm talking about when, for example, if you're black and you work in a majority white workplace, or if you're a woman and you're like one of the few girls and you walk into the kitchen and there's like a couple white guys talking and they see you walk in and they just suddenly go quiet and, you know, whatever they were saying, they didn't want you to hear. And it may not have been specifically about you or specifically about like your sex or race or whatever, but there's microaggressions and there's certain conversations that happen and they happen around particular people. And then there's other people who you would never have those conversations around. And I know I'm being super vague, but I also know that the people who are listening to this know exactly what I'm talking about because we've all done it.
Well, let me give you a solid example in a way that you can probably, this might be a good way to know that you are doing your job as an ally. Many years ago, I was in the Air Force. And actually, I was in the Air Force in the early 90s, right at the time that Don't Ask, Don't Tell was being enacted. And as if you've listened to me, any of my shows, or the fact that I'm a podcaster at all, you know that I'm not very good at shut up. I don't keep my opinions to myself. And on more than one occasion, some of my squadron mates would stop and go, "Are you gay?"
Oh my God.
And not in a, you know, "Gee, we probably shouldn't be saying this around you if you are a homosexual, sir. We don't want to offend you." No, it was, "What are you, some kind of fag? Why do you keep talking about this stuff?" If anyone has ever said that to you in that context, then you're probably already a good ally, if not, or, you know, real close to it. I have always defended my gay friends whenever necessary. And since the advent of the internet, yes, kids, there was a time before.
All right, Gramps.
you know, and that's another reason why I wanted to do this show is because especially on Facebook, I used to be real active on Twitter, but not so much anymore. But, you know, I'm very active on Facebook, and understanding is one thing. Letting people know that you are an ally is another thing. It's another thing to let people know that they have a safe place where you are. You know, I hope that most of the people that I interact with on Facebook know that if they have any questions about LGBTQ issues or if there are any of my friends who are members of the LGBT community, they know they can talk to me about this stuff and they're not going to get judgment. They're going to get, you know, at the very worst, I have no idea. And that's what being an ally is. It's being accepting. It's defending and helping where you can. And even if it's just a hug or, you know, an ear, you know, some people aren't into hugging. So don't hug if you're not cool, if you don't know if they're cool with it. But it's just being there, and saying, I'm here for you. What can I do to help? And, you know, that is the beginning of being a good ally. And that is where this show is coming from is, you know, we're going to talk about issues. We're going to talk about what people, what LGBTQ people go through. But we're also going to talk about the good stuff. We're going to talk about how to help, how to be there for people. And where to go, where to send people, where to contact people, where to, you know, what's the where's all of it. There's all kinds of stuff. And, you know, it's not a 24-hour, you know, 24/7 job. We're not saying that you need to, you know, stop being straight or white or cis or anything like that. You don't have to change who you are to accept somebody else any more than you need somebody else to change who they are to accept them. And that's what being an ally is. It's just saying, you know, ultimately, it is none of my business who you love or what's in your pants. All that matters is we work together, we have fun together, and I'm not going to let that dick over there with a stick hit you without doing something about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to be an ally, and it's complicated, which is why it takes an entire podcast show to really talk about all of the different duties, I guess. But to me, I think the most important part of the role of an ally is to have somebody who doesn't necessarily go through the things that I go through, who can be there and can sit down and patiently explain to other people why they're hurting me so that they can be patient and fine and cool and logical, and I don't have to if I'm in a state of hurt or anger, and I can just go off and be human and have my perfectly human reactions to how I've been treated, and that person can step in and protect me. But there's a lot of different functions to being an ally in order to do that. And a lot of those functions are contradictory, and we're going to go over it, and we're going to painstakingly hold your hand through this journey. It's going to be okay. So the next term on my list is misgendering. That is also a verb. Misgendering is to use incorrect pronouns or identifiers regarding gender towards a person. For example, if somebody were to call me she, in particular, like, I have a really weird-ass set of pronouns because I'm experimenting with anything right now, but I've pretty much explicitly told people that the one specific pronoun that's going to set my teeth on edge is she. So somebody calling me she, or even somebody calling Rick she, or somebody calling Laverne Cox a he, that would be misgendering. It's basically using male pronouns towards a female, or blah, 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 blah. Or additionally calling somebody a girl if they're not a girl, or calling somebody a man if they're not a man. Sometimes people just accidentally misgender people, and that's not really a bad thing. People just make mistakes. That's okay, as long as they're, like, scarce and you're actually putting an effort into it. But if you're misgendering people on purpose, that's super not okay. Don't do that. A gender identity is not a trump card that you can use in an argument if you get really pissed off at your kid who's come out to you as trans. Don't, like, withhold their chosen name or pronouns from them. That's what Rick would probably call a dick move.
Yes, yes. Now, there is one... all right. This is the point where we have to mention our coworker who just can't seem to grasp your pronouns.
Oh, I love her. She's so cute.
And she's not, there's no malicious intent. There's just, every time she calls you she or her, and it's just like, oh, bless her heart. Well, yeah, bless her heart is the word that the South
would use. Oh, bless your little heart. Yeah.
Because she just doesn't get it. And it's not that she's being mean, and it's not that she doesn't understand. It's just those connections in her brain just aren't working.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, as an ally, if someone misgenders, you can, and you actually asked me to do this, and I have, you can take them aside and say, you know, look, I know that, you know, last year this person was she, but now he's he. And, you know, most of the time they'll be like, oh, right, right. Sorry, I forgot. Now, if they are being a dick about it, if they're doing it maliciously and on purpose, then get in their face. Well, maybe not. I'm not suggesting you get in anybody's face, because confrontation isn't always good.
Do it. Get in their face. Get in their face. Fight.
If it's safe or whatever. But if it's someone who just, you know, bless their heart, they just can't get it. Sometimes you just got to let it go.
Yeah. There's different shades of them. I know exactly who you're talking about. And that's a particular thing that doesn't even bother me, because I just find it really adorable, and it just can kind of fall off my back. There's a lot of other people, it does sincerely hurt them. So, like, if you're an ally, maybe step in. But, you know, there's different shades. Some people misgender because, like, when I first came out, my little sister, oh my God, she really was trying, and she was totally cognizant of it, but she was just so freaking bad at it. Like, she would apologize every damn time, and I didn't even have the heart to, like, even correct her most of the time, because she was just trying so damn hard. And some people are really just bad at it. There's no other way to put it. They're bad at it, or they just don't get it. Or, you know, it's just an honest mistake. And then there's other people who are dicks. Just try to be patient and give people the benefit of a doubt.
And our final word of the night.
I think I lost the list again. Oh, no, there it is. Never mind. Sorry. Okay. The last word on my list is heteronormativity. That's got, like, a whole bunch of syllables, and it's also a term that comes from theory. Heteronormativity is the idea that heterosexuality, you know, being straight, is the quote-unquote normal orientation, and everything else is abnormal or other, or, you know, not necessarily weird, but unaverage. Historically, heteronormativity has been validated and rewarded and privileged on systemic and institutional and ideological levels. It's basically, or heteronormativity can be as small as automatically assuming that your daughter is going to bring home a boy, or, you know, it could be as big as all of the movies that come out in a year don't have any gay people in it. It's almost like in the fictional universe, gay people do not exist. You know, heteronormativity is, I guess, what I would call benign homophobia. It's not like you actively hate LGBT people. It's more like you're completely indifferent to them and they're not part of the norm, which is kind of a mistake because we absolutely are, because we've been here forever. And yep, that's it. That's all I got.
I think that's a good list. I realize that that's a lot of stuff to digest at once, and we will not be giving you a test. So Don't worry about it. And as we encounter these terms, and I'm sure there are plenty others that we haven't that we didn't discuss today, we will continue to define and explain and reinforce what we're talking about as we're going along. But I think this gives a good foundation as to where our focus is going to be. Granted, our focus is going to be pretty wide, but you know, the sorts of things that we're looking to examine and explain and explore on this show. So, folks, we are going to call it a show. I hope you enjoyed our conversation today. We are going to have an email address very soon. I think it's going to be qs@simplysyndicated.com. I'm not sure yet. That's what I asked Rich to set up for us. I don't know if he's had a chance yet. But when we do have an email address, we will let you all know. I'm going to set us up a Facebook page and a Twitter and all of that fun stuff, hopefully by the next show or so. We have already recorded show 2, which will come out fairly soon, hopefully within a week or so if you're listening to this. We haven't quite settled in on what the schedule is going to be just yet, but that one is not as much fun, but we recorded it shortly after the horrible events in Orlando over the summer. So we'll be talking about violence towards the LGBTQ community. We really are going to want to hear from you. We want to know what questions you have, what your opinion is about anything we've had to say. And we want to entertain any and all ideas that we can. So, Casper, thank you so much for putting together such a fabulous list of words and for going through this again, because this was our second take two. And you did a fabulous job. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I mean, you're welcome. You know what I mean? Just
it gets easier, trust me.
Oh, my God.
So, folks, we will talk to you again really soon. Take care, and bye-bye.